Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisoners in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they get their hands on to incarcerate. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you're having is When God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Chicken wings for that money, even though they was no good. But you do get something for your money. But when you put your money in the church bucket, what do you get back? Hope and a future after you die. And my position on that, if I have to die to experience heaven, I don't need that religion. Anyone who tells me that I should be content with accepting hell on earth when the white man has his heaven here and the Chinese man has his heaven here and the Arab and East Indian has his heaven here and they're even building their heaven in my ghetto and you're telling me I got to die in order to experience what they are getting right now, that's a religion I don't need because that's a religion for servitude. And so we have to put the black church to task and ask them, what are you doing without Jesus money? Let me tell you what they're doing with your Jesus money. Every black church in America has their money in a white bank. It is the white banks that are funding the regentrification ethnic cleansing movement. So all of us go to church. We put $3 million in the church coffers every Sunday. $3 million goes to a white bank every Sunday. And guess what they do on Monday? They take $3 million of black people's white Jesus money and they give loans to white land developers and businesses and entrepreneurs to come into the ghetto where the church is located, buy up all the property, and force grandma out on the street homeless. Now, grandma been going to that church for 30 years. Grandma been giving that church $50 every Sunday. And lo and behold, grandma had to finally face the reality. that it was your Jesus money that put your ass on the street.
Mm.
I want to fly like an eagle. Young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Confusion outside a special care home for senior citizens. Families claim they were only given a few hours' notice to move loved ones out after the home was suddenly shut down. 7 Action News reporter Aaron Baskerville is live in Livonia. Aaron.
Glenda, we overuse the word shock a lot in this business, but it definitely applies here today. I want you to take a look behind me. Families had absolutely no idea what was going on today. Let me set the scene. As you can see, a Livonia police officer rolling by right now. That's building one. That still remains open. But there are three other buildings on this property that have all been shut down for one reason or another. Inside building one, still 10 to 12 residents. We've also learned recently three higher-ups have quit for one reason or another, but today 80 seniors were forced to move out. 30 to 40 workers may no longer have a job here. Just describe what you're seeing and how people are feeling and what's the mood over there.
I was expecting anger. I think everybody's just in disbelief.
Some carried out on stretchers. Other seniors wheeled away during one of the hotter days of the year, forced to leave what they called home.
And if I had somebody to punch, I would be in jail probably, because I would punch their eyes, the lights out. This don't make any sense.
With little notice, families tell us they had only hours to get out of the Ashley Court Special Care Home in Livonia. According to documents obtained by 7 Action News, the state's Bureau of Fire Services came to the home 3 separate times from December of last year to May, finding dozens of deficiencies. The agency says the home never fixed them, even though it was given more than enough time to do so.
For all of the other people that are in terrible situations, I just cannot believe that he did this and didn't give us any notice.
Families left dumbfounded, also claiming they were never told why the home was shutting down. Documents state special investigators also found in one case staff leaving a resident on the ground for 6 hours after falling, another time dropping the resident, hitting her face on a table, and on 3 other occasions finding the resident with soiled undergarments. In Livonia, Aaron Baskerville, 7 Action News.
At number.
All right, today our topic, and we're going to probably cover this, not probably, but definitely cover this on as well as offline from here on out with It's My House. And that's housing illiteracy. Now, this title was inspired, and the title is Housing Illiteracy 2023, The New Slavery. I just read online within the last 24 hours or less that the state of Florida and one other state will start, as part of the academic curriculum in public schools, they're going to start teaching you need to take a course on financial literacy before you graduate, now, which I think is a very good step in the right direction. There's 2 states, Florida and one other state. I can't remember the other state by right now, but and eventually all 50 states will chime on. I mean, they'll jump on board that. But as I got to think, you know, financial literacy is so broad. And I thought, well, you know what? There's a lot with housing. Because a lot of housing issues, foreclosures, evictions, high utility bills, landlord issues, code enforcement issues, gentrification, a lot of those issues pop up because of under the big giant umbrella, because there's a lot under this umbrella of housing illiteracy. Housing illiteracy. So that's what we're going to talk about today, housing illiteracy, and then how can we become housing. And this is a global problem, by the way. So it's not a USA problem, but it's a global problem. So we'll be back in the next few minutes, and then we're going to get into housing illiteracy, which is, this has nothing to do with race, but housing illiteracy is the new slavery.
People keep talking about how the world is going to come to an end. And I wonder, in these days and these times,
if anybody
people keep talking about how society is falling down today, and as hard as I try not to listen just to what them folks got to say, but you know, I just can't help but look around and see we digging our own grave. And there's just one thing I want to know. Can anybody be saved? Well,
If I fall down on my knees, will it give me just another day? Will the air I breathe be better if I'm not around you? Will the man be spared who spoke the truth, cause he never did abuse it?
As long as I wanna be saved, how can I be free in my mind? As long as I'm a slave, is anybody gonna be saved? Is anybody gonna be saved? Oh, say it again.
Bye. name's Duncan. I'm an edge of your plan. You know what I do.
Today's podcast, and this is, we're going to be covering this topic in some kind of way every month, and we'll touch on it some kind of way at least once a week. Housing illiteracy, housing illiteracy, 2023, what I call the new slavery. Now, this is a global issue, the way I see it. There's a housing, matter of fact, how within the last 'cause man has been around for thousands of years. I would say housing, and let me put a date on this. This is 2023 now. So let's go back to 1863. I'm gonna say housing has been more of an issue in the last 160 years than it was, 161 years ago. What we now call the United States point of view, the average slave male slave, and probably even female slave, was more housing literate than the average, and we're talking about a person that couldn't read or write. They weren't literate in that sense. Didn't go to college. There were no government programs around. They were more literate in 1863 or 1492 or any days prior to that, but they were more housing literate than the person who's got a PhD in rocket science from Harvard or Yale or any of the Ivy League schools today. Because education back during those years, first thing, you didn't have government involved in it. That's the first thing. I have a great uncle, Jose. I never met him, just heard about him through the family. Uncle Jose only have a fifth or sixth academic grade education. But Uncle Jose, my great uncle, what he could do, okay, and he didn't learn this in school. He learned this, I guess, from his dad or grandfather or both, is he knew how to go out into the woods, identify the proper tree to cut down. He knew how to source his own lumber. He made his own lumber because there was no Home Depot, Menards, or Lowe's, or Ace Hardware Store, Lumber 84 back then. And he knew how to source his own lumber, make his own lumber, and build houses which stand to this day for any relatives or neighbors or friends who were getting married. He was not connected to any finance company, no government insurance program, no FHA, no VAA, nothing like that. He was housing literate or house building literate, because house building literacy comes under housing literacy. But the average person walking around in the Western world today, and even in developing countries too, but they don't know, and some have advanced degrees. If you go into a shelter of the Salvation Army, a men's shelter, a women's shelter, a family shelter, there's no shortage of people in there who have college degrees now. So they might be literate in the sense of they know how to read and write and do some basic counting. But when it comes to housing literacy, they're housing illiterate. So in our program notes, which is on the scrolling marquee here on Blog Talk Radio, if you happen to be online, let me read some of the topics. And we can't cover all this in one little podcast, but let me go some of the ideas that we'll be going over throughout the year. We're homeless by country, homeless by city. Rent court, understand what rent court really is, housing court, and they're different names in different cities, okay? What is code enforcement? And in some places, there's armed code enforcement. These are the housing police. See, there's one thing when you're dealing with the, you know, the police department, you know, that we were, but not. Now there's the housing police, but they're called code enforcement. And in some areas of the country, you have armed code enforcement. You need to know about that. Okay. You also need to become familiar with this is what we're going to be doing on here pretty strong. Bankless housing. Bankless housing. In other words, housing that has no mortgage on it whatsoever. I said the new slavery. If you get a mortgage on your house, you're a slave until that house is paid off. If you happen to live long enough to pay that house off, and in most cases, this is voluntary slavery because you signed up for it. Bankless housing, how to acquire housing skills, and there are various housing skills, landlord skill sets. Zero government housing. I don't like government housing at all. It's another form of slavery. let's see. In the United States, there are over 43 million rental units in the United States. That's a significant portion of the country population. There are over 3 million evictions in the United States, and there are 7,500 municipal courts in 37 states, and some rent courts and housing courts are within that figure. Over $3 million in criminal cases, really. Now, there's criminal courts, but there are also housing cases that are flipped over to be criminal cases. I don't have the exact figures on that yet, but it's within this 3 million criminal cases that are heard yearly or processed yearly. Courts collect over $2 billion in fines and fees. Now, I also have to break that down because, you know, that's everybody, and that's for the municipal side. And then there's, you know, there's landlord-tenant court, there's housing court, the district court, and I haven't included anything on a federal level. But billions of dollars are made off of people's housing illiteracy, okay? And gentrification, in my opinion, I'm a black guy saying this, has nothing to do with race. Gentrification, the primary root cause of gentrification, at least from It's My House point of view, my point of view, has everything to do with housing illiteracy. You're not going to legislate it away. You're not going to have this is not a race issue at all, as many people believe. Gentrification comes down to the indigenous people that were living in that community or in fear of losing their home in that community on a critical mass basis within that community, they're housing illiterate. Your political liaisons, your aldermen, your councilmen, your ANC commissioners, your mayors, they're housing illiterate for the most part. So how are they going to help you out? How are they going to help you save your home? And they're housing illiterate. This is not only in the United States. Let's say this is a global thing. And let's go to, top. Let's do it this way. You guys can do it online with me. Homelessness by country. Let's do it that way. Homeless. By country. Homeless by country. Now, I mean country run. This is 2023, and we're in 2023, day three. Let's narrow it down. They are Nigeria, number one. Nigeria has 24,400,000 homeless people. Oh, wait a minute, yeah. And that's 23. And their total population, that's out of a population of 223,804,632 people. So Nigeria's number one. Pakistan has 20 million homeless people. Coming in at number three, Egypt has 12 million homeless people. Columbia and South Carolina has over 4.9 million people. Philippines has 4,500,000 homeless people. China has over 2.5 million. United States has 480,466 homeless people. Mexico has over 400,000 homeless people. France has over 300,000. Australia has over 100,000. Now, this is what, you know, this is what they call homeless. Now, Cuba has 11, Jesus, man, Cuba has over 11 million homeless people. Haiti has has 37,000 homeless people. Now let's go by homelessness by city. let's go USA first. New York City has over 78,000 homeless people. Los Angeles City, Los Angeles, and, you know, in California has over 56,000 people homeless. Seattle, Washington has over 11,000 homeless people. And the common denominator, as I've said on here, how about teaching somebody how to build a house? That's a basic. Kunta Kinte, fresh off the boat, 17 years old, knew how to build a house. Or at least, you know, what, you know, the hut that they, he knew how to build that. He knew how to put a roof over his head. Okay, Eugene, Oregon has quite a few. Los Angeles, California, they say, already by percentage, gee, Eugene, Oregon ranks number one. Number two, Los Angeles, California. Number three, New York City. Number four, San Jose. Anchorage, Ohio. Man, they got a whole bunch of people. Amarillo, Texas, and I went to school in the Amarillo. They have 250,000. Jesus, man. Columbus, Ohio has 86,000. Are these figures? This is crazy. Tulsa, Oklahoma, Minneapolis, Albuquerque, New Mexico, Topeka. There's a bunch of, this is just this country. By gender, 60% in the eastern United States, 60% of the people that are homeless in the United States are men. 39.1% are women. You know, these tiny house events that I've gone to over the years, the number one demographic has been women, white women. They'll learn how to build their own homes. Okay, homelessness by, now let's see, global. Because once again, this is a global issue. Because see, governments, local governments and bankers, they don't want you to be independent. Let's see. Which city has the most homeless in the world? Mumbai, India. Let's go with 25 cities here. Mumbai, formerly Bombay. Okay. I'm going from 25 on up. Lisbon, Portugal has an issue with homelessness. Denver, Colorado ranks number 24. Indianapolis, Indiana, 23, homeless issue. Dublin, Ireland has a homeless issue at 22. Rio de Janeiro, 21. Baltimore, Maryland, number 20. Tokyo, Japan, 19. Chicago, Illinois, 18. This is now Washington, D.C., number 17. Rome, Italy, number 16. Triple four, 30 minutes away from me. Number 15. This is on the low scale, people. San Diego, California, number 14 globally. After the beast, it comes in at 13. Washington ranks number 12. Globally, San Francisco is number 11. Sao Paulo, Brazil, one of the largest cities in the world. Budapest, Hungary has a homeless problem. They're coming at number 9. Buenos Aires in Argentina, number 8. Mumbai, formerly Bombay, India, ranks number 7. Jakarta, Indonesia, ranks number 6. Mexico City ranks number 5 as homelessness. Russia, number 4. Los Angeles, California, number 3. Globally, New York City ranks number 2. New York City ranks number 2 globally with the most homeless people, and coming in at number 1, and I've been in this town before. Time for me to head back. Manila, Philippines has around, I'm reading right now, 22.8 million people who reside in the slums that are homeless. And that's probably Metro Manila. $1.2 million of that are children. Well, and that's why we'll be covering this from here on out. You know, we'll be doing workshops and retreats in various places. So we'll let you guys know all that. Okay. All right, now, let's see. Okay, let's go to the phone lines here. No, boy. Okay, wait a minute. Now, I got to find my studio. Okay, going back to the blog talk. So anyway, housing illiteracy, my purpose is to help make people housing literate. Know what you're getting into. Okay, let's see. It's the third day of the year. And I'm going to open up my mic here. 309 area code. Happy third day, January 3rd, 2023.
Happy third day.
Yes. Chris, now, I think you dropped out for a moment, but I don't know if you homelessness, housing illiteracy is a global
right.
issue.
The one thing I didn't hear when you were speaking those statistics, now it said how many adults, men, were homeless in America and how many women. And I heard the women were 39.
All right, there was 60%. All right, 60% men, and about 39% women in the United States.
Okay, now when you look at those two numbers, I'm going to call bull crap, because where's the children at? There's more homeless children than there are men and women.
Okay.
So where's that number?
I don't have that number yet, but you are correct. There are a lot of homeless children.
There's more. The number's higher. I'm a member of Continuum of Care.
Yeah, because you're right. 60%, you may as well round up 39% to 40. So 60 and 40 is 100%, but you're right. They're missing children.
They're missing the children. They're not talking about the children, because the children's number is actually higher than the men and women.
Okay.
The children's number higher than the veterans. None of them asked to be brought here, but there's more of them dealing with the problem than the adults. Now, they are the solution
right.
to every adult's problem, and that needs to be the addressing. And when they're giving you the statistics that you're reading, but they're not – I just heard the last one. They gave you the global number. What'd you say the global number was?
Not
or
global,
was it at one country or whatever?
Which one now? I did it by two ways. I did global for cities and then global for countries. So the number one city for homelessness as far as numbers would be Manila, Philippines. But number one as far as a country would be Nigeria.
Nigeria, right.
And I pulled these, I just went online and picked them up. You know. The United States has they say around 3 million. I think it's more than that, but that's the number I have.
That number, what's funny is before COVID, and the number actually went up after COVID. But they were actually able to put people in motels and stuff. They, you know, there was some emergent funding to help get things in, you know. And if they would have done the right thing and not just put people in a hotel room, but actually went into the individual and started having interest in that person to be something, that would have been the answer. But they didn't. And that was part of the program that I wanted to see done in California. It's the one thing they're lacking. They're not embracing what that one person, what that person can do, who they're going to be, what they're going to be. They don't, you know, they're not trying to help them. And that was one of the things that when I gave them the plan was to do that. It was like, look, so now we're gonna, you know, we get our opportunity. And I'm very thankful and blessed to be where I'm at today and being able to meet the people that I always wanted to meet. We wanted to meet one of them in specific, and that's the judge that put the judgment on the city of L.A. I wanted to meet him. I wanted to say thank you for standing up for human rights. And, you know, he pretty much, I mean, they didn't do it. So now they're in failure of it. So are they going to be, you know, truly held accountable? You know, I messed up on a city ordinance, and they're telling me they want to throw me in jail over it. A city ordinance of helping people. All I did was help people. Give them a place to where they were safe. And I got in trouble. Now, what's truly going to be held accountable? Who's going to be held accountable? And is there going to be an accountability? But, you know, a man made a stand. But I also heard that the governor walked in his courtroom just last week, came right in the face, right in the middle of the courtroom, and said, what's going on with the homeless issue? That was late last week. So, mm-hmm. You know, the governor is aware. He wants to see things change because he put things in place that could change things. But he's not seeing the change because they're riding the money. The people are getting the money. They're spending it. They're giving it to private individuals and stuff like that, but they're not helping a full big move of people. And the discussion I had was between 12 and 15,000 on the first round. And that's a good number. It's going to be 20% of the population of the homeless. And if you had that on a 90-day turn to be getting them, or a six-month turn, getting them into permanent supportive housing, then this would be the time during those 3 to 6 months that we're building the permanent supportive housing for them to move out of, so we can move more people into the other. But at the same time, you know, there's only 12,000 people that's going to get the help in the beginning. You know, where are they going to pick 20% from? Is it going to be done from, you know, everybody put their name in a thing and we sit here and draw out little balls or a little piece of paper? Can you say this, this, or this? You know, my criteria is this: children first, women second, but not over men. Okay, but children first, because if a man has a child, he's in. If a woman has a child, if it's a man and a woman and they have a child, they're in. And then it's pretty much we need to help the weakest link first. That's the key. We're only as strong as our weakest link. So we have to look at who needs it the most.
What did you have in mind for the children? How are they to be helped? The homeless children.
We're talking
about a homeless child with, because I'm just imagining, are these homeless children with a parent or what?
There's a lot of them that aren't. Okay, a lot of them that are not, and they, you know, pretty much thrown to the wolves here. and this is where the sex trafficking starts, where all of it starts. Everything about their life starts, and then they're being thrown away. So they don't need to be thrown away. And what they have done in their life doesn't mean what they're going to do in life. That's just the only thing they know in life. They need to know there is life in their life. You know, they're breathing. They're thinking. They're creating. And to me, you know, they're perfect when they're born. They're perfect. There's nothing about them that isn't perfect. And here I am wanting to change they're going to see, because everything you see, you process 200,000 times faster than you hear it. And that's why, you know, kids are scared of violence, because they see it. And if they get beat on, they wind up doing the beating. Unless they were like me. I looked at my dad. I said, I will never do to my children what you've done to me. But when my dad looked at me as an adult with the kids, even kids that weren't mine, and he told me, he says, you're the best father I've ever seen in my life. But he knew he wasn't. But I did watch him turn into be a good man. I never thought that man could be a good man. When I was a kid, at 4 years old, I wanted to die because of what I seen. And it didn't stop because I was four. It continued. So what you become is what you see, and it's what you're going to be if you don't take the opportunity to change it. If you don't get an opportunity to change it. And I want people to realize they can do anything they want, and they have no idea that they could or even what they want to do. We need to explore, and that's what life's about. It's an exploration. It's an adventure. It's a journey. But why go on it alone? And it's, I don't know, we have to do something. There's so many lost people out there. Lost. And I can't, you're right, okay, this has been said. You know, and what it is people make up people's mind. You know, there's people that just say they want to stay outside. Okay, that's their choice. But don't make the choice for all of them. Ask them. Give them the opportunity to have this. If they don't take it, that's their choice. The man the other day, he has money coming in every month, and he's bouncing from hotel to hotel. And he picks his nights when he gets the hotel. But he spends all of his money by the end of the month on these hotels and just trying to survive. And I said, well, if you're getting this money every month,
you know how much he's paying per day? You know how much he's paying per day for those hotel rooms?
He's paying $79 a day.
Okay.
And he's picking and choosing his days on when he stays out in the parking garage in the parking deck. So
that's over $1,500 a month. That's just for 20 days.
20 days, right. And he's going to spend 10 of them out on the street. But, you know, he's got an alcohol problem. But I asked him, I said, how about I give you a house for thousands of days, they would only cost you a third of what you're spending on these hotels, and you don't ever have to worry about being out in the weather if you don't want to be. And he was drunk. And he tells me, no, I'm good. He said, there ain't no help here. It's just time to move on. I'm like, yeah. You're right about there not being no help here. He's been homeless here for 3 years. I said, but the thing is I just offered you help, and you just gave me a choice. It's your choice. You told me what you wanted, and what did I say? Okay. And I walked on. Well, I've seen him. I'll say hello to him. I don't have to ask him again. He already made his choice. He knows what the offer is. If he ever wants to make it, he'll come back to me. But I guarantee you he will. Because one of these days I'm going to catch him sober. Don't know when, but I'm going to catch him sober. And that's when he's going to get to choose again. But right now, I haven't seen him sober. So people have a choice, but don't make it for them. Let them choose. But understand, what you choose is your choice. And, you know, I'm working with a homeless boy that's not homeless. He's homeless because he ain't got an address, really. But he's got a roof over his head. And he had a choice to make yesterday. And he made the right choice. Because he was going to result back to what he was. And he was going to run. He said, it's easier to run away. I said, yeah, it's easier to quit. It's real hard to win. Then he says, well, how? I said, yeah, don't quit. It's that simple. Don't quit. So, guess what? He's a happy-go-lucky person today. He didn't quit yesterday. Well, I think you have to change because you made a choice in the wrong way. You can get upset and you can be confused. Make that. Think about it before you shoot off at the mouth. Because everything that's running through your head doesn't need to be said. Go ahead, L.A. I'm sorry.
No problem. Okay, we've got some other people here. Let me open up the lines. Remember just to press 1, my board's refreshing. If you want to get in on the conversation. Today we're I guess, doing an introduction to housing illiteracy. Housing illiteracy, and which is a huge topic. 262 area code, your mic is open.
Greetings. We're rising, you guys. I wanted to share about just my reflections on what Chris was sharing about his experience. Is that Chris, by the way?
Yes.
Is that Chris Collins? Okay, I thought I knew his voice. I just wanted to be sure, recognize your voice. So now the thing is, my name is Reba Bruce Brown, and I work with children. I teach Spanish and English literacy. Conflict resolution, which is another level of literacy. It's a literacy and skills life book, Lil Giant Student Workbook. The thing is, what Chris enlightened me on is the fact that it's something that we know as God-sent teachers and educators and leaders that we give these children experiences or an individual experiences. I was really, really pondering on your experience as a 4-year-old. You had actually lived an experience and process that you envisioned that you could be different than the environment that you were in, even at 4 years old. And I guess that's what you were saying at 4 years old, but you were still a child, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. 1976,
yeah, so
I was begging God to take my life.
Yeah. At that point, you made a decision. Your survival instinct said, hey, you know, although I wish that I was in another realm of life, that you actually were able to process and envision and began, I guess, as you grew to live out that purpose, to say, I will never treat my children like that, and became a great father. So your hope and faith in the fact that individuals who don't want to be healthy, I've met people who say, no, I sleep at the hospital. I eat there. I've had men to say that. The reality is that what individuals don't know, if they don't know that there are resources, and literacy is a major, major deal. I'm teaching Spanish, and a lot of people, parents included, are like, well, my children need to learn English, or I need to learn English. And I was like, well, I got you on both and the stick. So I got you. I got you on both ends of the spectrum. There is an idea that because we don't know, we get taken advantage of, we get swindled. We still, and I would say swindled, like that property on 35th and Indiana. There's a vacant lot where my father's paid for building used to sit. Taxes was not the issue in demolishing the property because there was a tax buyer on it. But when the property was leveled, the tax buyer withdrew. So that bought me more time, another 2 years tax exemption, redemption. So by the time the building was vacant, after my father transitioned, my sons and I began to try to gut it out, and I was in court. So the reality is that my children have become homeless at that point. So I feel that the city of Chicago should be held accountable, starting with that alderman who had been demolishing, she's been leveling property after property. There was a news report as far as those buildings coming down. My building was legally boarded up, and since then, as I was instructed by the courts to do, I had a corrupt attorney who actually had lied and said he basically closed the case the last day he was in court. He basically got the case dismissed because it had been in court for a while, and that was building court. So the violations really were null and void. At that point, no one was living in the property. So, you know, he was really just trying to get money. I guess they paid him off. I did have the taxes. So this is what I want to educate people on if they don't know. When a property is vacant, the taxes are not the same as when a property is occupied, okay? So I'm trying to remember who told me to go and get an assessment done. I was talking to a lot of people. L.A. Knows what, you know, how I was just on the air and just reaching out. So I became more literate by reading a lot as well, but those who can't read, that's one thing. But I also ask questions. So I encourage the masses, whatever struggles you're going through, ask questions. Go into your alderman's office because they have resources for children or youth that need community service hours. You know, you could be connected with community service hours as well as job resources and housing. So that's one thing that I really want to emphasize. And we'll be sharing resources of such at our conference scheduled for Friday, February 3rd. This year at the Grand Ballroom in Chicago. So we need sponsors, donors, youth who want to perform. We have an ad book. It starts at $25 up to $75. So we have a wealth of resources for individuals like the young people. They'll be able to donate 50% of the proceeds from their personal ticket sales. And there's a way for everybody to be able to help their organization or their families. And so our fiscal agent is out of Wisconsin, our current fiscal agent. So we're looking for another fiscal agent so that I could deposit the funds and we can get our percentage. This is one thing I want to share as well. A lot of people who run not-for-profits, they don't really know. I had one organization who is one of our sponsors now, and they're going to be sponsoring the event, a portion of the event, because you're going to get an ad book, but they actually need to pay their taxes. They had people saying that they were going to write grants, and I told them, your 501c3, your EIN, all that information, you gave them literally your organization's social security number to use, and they were not able to get paid and things like that. So I'm going to train their board. I like to say educate because you train animals, but I'm going to educate their board. I've connected with them before, but I don't know. I say the squeakiest wheel gets the oil, but I don't boast. Those people who swindled them actually talked a good game. They made it look like they, I guess some of them didn't know, but they knew the illegal way. But every time there's some illegal way to do something, there's a legal way to do something. There's more than one way to skin a cat. So there's funding out there available, and boards of directors, yes, you can give me a call, 773-449-8839. Again, the number is 773-449-8839, or Google REBA, R-E-B-A, the teacher, and I'll have you, my website will pop up, so you guys can leave a comment, request resources. If I don't have them, I will connect you even with my online resources, Facebook, LinkedIn. There are a wealth of resources out here, because keep in mind, you're not the first person who has needed something. So even if you don't, if there's no program, I'm also a policymaker. So, and I'm with the Educational Village Keepers, Community TCSA. The reality is that laws are created in many cases because of injustice, or they're modified. Policies are implemented and statutes due to either injustices or to be fair. So that's what the legal system is supposed to be for. But because many people don't know, they're not literate about the law, you know, what it states. A lot of these young people, by the way, just to give you this heads up, they know what the police can and cannot do as far as detaining them, their rights to not speak, their right to an attorney, things like that. These young people are acting as scholars. So, yeah, so you guys will hear from a couple of youth at the event, and just keep in mind that, you know, inspiring stories like Chris's, you at a very young age decided, hey, I can change my destiny. Even though at those moments, there were moments that you were like, look, I just wish, you know, we're glad that you did not, you know, take yourself out of here, but, you know, you found a way of escape. In my eyes, in that desire to not be that type of person. So, to be able to envision a different life, I think that was a part of your survival skills. So, by the way, I'd like to do a retreat. I would engage, I did speak with the director of operations at Chicago South Loop Hotel, which is now Wyndham Chicago. So we're now partnered with the Wyndham Chicago. We need you guys to get your reward, so give me a call as far as that goes as well. You can get points off, I think even a free night stay. We'll be training this upcoming week, and so I'll learn more about the Wyndham rewards program and so forth, but I was able to glance at the brochure, so I'm studying, so that I'll be able to run off the tip of my tongue. So we are located at 11 West 26th Street. That's off 26th and State. So I'd like to do the retreat there. It's one location, one retreat for Chicago, at the Wyndham Chicago. So I heard you guys speak of that. And we spoke about retreats before when we talked about Pembroke. And then I had a space out in, where's that Yogi Berra Camp? Yogi Berra Camp, Indiana. It's in Indiana. The guy who was going to donate the space, he had some trailers with the little small storage container. I'll reach back out to him. He actually sold 4 of his 5 plots. but there's, you know, you can get families to come out to different spaces, especially parents that go out on different educational excursions. You know, the Title I funds pay for that. So just reach out to me if you are a public school parent, teacher, principal, or any educator. We can find out ways where if a family can't afford, let's say, a retreat package, they can go through their local school. So what do you guys think about the retreat idea in Chicago? Because you guys mentioned retreat.
That's a good idea. Matter of fact, now what's all involved within the retreat?
Well, you mentioned, I guess, the retreat that you were speaking of to educate, to do a retreat. Is that what you were speaking of? Because I certainly want to focus on literacy.
Okay, well, yeah, ours deal with your building. Matter of fact, if you, I just posted something on our Facebook page, and our Facebook page is It's My House TV. It's My House TV, Earth Wealth Forest. That's our Facebook page. And I just found this article. Says, new report finds at least 65,000 people experiencing homelessness in Chicago. Now, this article was written October 5th, 2022, so it's less than a year old. It says, a recent report by the Chicago Coalition for Homeless found that at least 65,000 people were experiencing homelessness in the city in 2020, which includes those who temporarily stayed with others in addition to people living in shelters and on the street. Statewide in Illinois, nearly 40,000 Illinois public school students experience homelessness, and nearly 110,000 Illinois residents experience homelessness by temporarily staying with others. And once again, I posted that on our Facebook page, which is It's My House TV at Earth Wealth Forest. And hold on, let me try to find my way back to the studio here. So that's a significant amount of people that are homeless in the city of Chicago.
Yeah, where I just moved from, Brother Lane, the teen and young adult population is just heart-wrenching. There is a that was near 79th and Cottage Grove. There was a housing program for youth, and they age out at 25. So that's the, they always give them some time as an adult. I met a young man who he got his they assist with the first 6 months rent, I believe. I think that they should not give that young person a check. I feel that they should put that, make sure that they actually agree, that, you know, to the rules, how, you know, housekeeping rules and so forth, but don't give them that funding. They can choose where they want to live, but then work with landlords to pay that 6 months. Because you give them the money, I mean, how you want to actually ensure that they're at least going to have some stability, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they do have, like, workshops and things like that. I wanted to teach a workshop with them. It's hard sometimes to get through to some of the program directors and so forth. It's really interesting. Really interesting. But we talked about Brother LA. Remember we talked about, I think a couple of years ago, we began to consider doing retreats for the
let me play this video. Here's my solution to that, because I don't think you're going to get any workable solution out of any government. So here's my solution for that. In a form of a retreat.
Welcome to Camp Huguet.
This 11-year-old spent her summer turning the inside of this camper from this to this.
I was looking through an American Girl magazine, and I saw a camper for $650 for an American Girl, and it was a very nice camper. My dad said that was really expensive for us, so he said that we could get a real camper for that amount of money. So then I went out and I started looking for one. We saw down the road a house had a camper for sale that I had been looking at for a while. So I really wanted to get it, and the guy said it was for $500. And then I told him $400 because that was what I had. And he said sold.
And the total cost of renovations thus far? $400.
We had looked on Pinterest and saw a lot of cool camper ideas, and I like this beachy boho style. There's lots of plants and different colors and sea glass and driftwood, that style. So I like that, and we decided to paint the camper walls white and then our kitchen cabinets turquoise. So this is my dining area. I got this from our potting shed that had dust and dead flies all over it, so we cleaned it up and that's what we got. We planted some plants from Dollar General in there. We have all of this on the backside came from our house except for that one picture back there from Dollar General. And a fun fact about these, this table and these cabinets, they flip down into a bed, and so does this. And then over here we have the kitchen where we can't quite cook stuff yet, but it's very decorative. And this is our refrigerator. This is the inside of it. And then if we walk a little further down, we have right here, these are very nice decals that we got for a dollar at the Dollar Tree. And then if we walk a little bit farther in here, we have a mirror that we painted the edges that came with the camper originally. And we have a closet over here, and it's the Lawrence little camper. I got this side from my neighbor who made it for me. And then we keep walking, and now we're in the bedroom. So we have four beds in here, and we got these really cute mattresses off of Etsy.
She painted most of it herself. She had her grandma come over the one day and help with the cupboards, but I would be gone for the day, and I'd come home, and she'd say, like, you could tell, and I'd say, how long were you in here? And she's like, oh, I painted about 4 hours straight.
Well, I'm very creative and artistic, so I love to paint and draw and stuff like that. So it kind of came to me naturally.
With this COVID thing, it's kind of interrupting her fun that she wants to have in it. But she's making the best of it.
Maura hopes to be able to have friends over soon, but a chance to get away from home works for now.
I hope you enjoyed my camper tour. Thanks for stopping by.
This is Inside Edition Digital.
All right, now that was Lauren Nelson. Lauren Nelson is 12. She'll be 13 this year, I guess. She was 11 when she did that audio you just heard. So the long and short of it, that's the kind of retreats that we're going to be putting on, something that a 10 or 11-year-old could do. Now, what Lauren went through, let's look at the steps. Okay, step one. She had a budget of $400. Fucking 11-year-old, man. Okay. And so she went to Craigslist. So her dad told her to take out Craigslist. So she went to Craigslist. An 11-year-old. All right. Next thing she did, she found something for sale for $500, a camper. All right. And she had $400, so she was able to get it for $400. All right. Next, mind you, she didn't go to the government. She didn't go to Section 8. She didn't go to, you know, any councilman or the mayor's office. There was no VA, this is person to person. One of the things that we're going to teach also within our housing literacy is money literacy, because there are three basic fundamental types of money. Fiat money, which is that's what most people work for, fiat money, also known as legal tender, United States dollars, euros, pesos, that type of thing. Then there's representative money, and then there's commodity money. Now, when Lauren bought that camper, that's really a form of commodity money. Well, we'll get more into that, because that's something that you have direct control over. But we'll go over how those three things, because instead of working for fiat money exclusively, You need to work for creating commodity money. That's something that you create. If you grow, if you have a tomato plant and plant it and grow tomatoes, you're growing commodities. Because you can, you're not going to eat all those tomatoes. You know, eat one, two, or three and sell the rest. Commodity money. But we'll get it. That's a whole other podcast. We're going to get it into those three basic terms. You need to know. We're talking about the fundamentals. Anyway, getting back to Lauren Nelson, she'll be 13 later this year. So with the help of her mother, father, grandmother, and some girlfriends of her sister and all that, social capital, she put another $800 to buy and fix up. Now, Lauren, that's her little personal thing. That's her little tiny house at 11 years old with no mortgage on it. That's the way the ball's going. She's part of Generation Z. You have Generation Z people looking at their parents who are Generation X. Some might, young millennials, definitely the baby boomer generations, one and two. They're looking at, they don't want to get an FHA mortgage. They don't want any help from the government on a local status. It's just like Lauren. Notice there was no credit application there. There was no credit checks. All right. She bought something that totally bypassed, that's what I talked about earlier, bankless housing. So now if you go to, now, Laura, or Lauren rather, Lauren Nelson's her name, and you type in on any search engine, particularly YouTube, type in Lauren Nelson or 11-year-old camper or tiny house, her videos will come up. Or if you type in 13-year-old tiny house, or pick your number out of the teenagers, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, build tiny houses. There are new videos coming up every day, if not every week. Okay. That's where the ball's going. Not only going, that's where it's at. So when we do our retreats, okay, as simplified as you heard it from the lips of an 11-year-old, Lauren Nelson, that's what we'll be doing. Now, we might not be doing campers, because Lauren did a Nelson, she did a camper that needed some fix-up. But we'll be going to somebody like Chris Collins, who will help us put together, create our own erector set and build places. Or, as Reema and I, we were talking, we'll get some pallets. We'll get some wood pallets and make a house out of that. That's what our retreats will be like. And once we get the momentum going, we'll have something every week, and we'll have some events after school. So just think about it. If that's one headache, they're not, imagine, now you know what, Amish children go to school academically grades 1 through 8. 1 through 8. But as a culture and community, everybody in the household knows something about how the house built. They're very housing literate. I haven't been to the social services office before, or driven past here in a while, but hopefully I don't. But if you see any Amish person or Mennonite person in the social services office, take a picture of them and send it to me. So that our retreats will hopefully have a lot of Lauren Nelson's new ones coming up. And then this includes growing food. Once again, just type in, and there's another one, one of my favorite ones, and she's probably about 21 now, but her TV, or her YouTube channel is Marie TV, that's spelled M-A-R-E-E, M-A-R-E-E TV, one word, Marie TV. This young lady, black woman, she got pregnant when she was either 15 or 16. Let's say 16, she had a baby by 17 at the latest. And what she did was, instead of going to the social services office, and I'm not knocking that. I'm not knocking that. Okay. What she and her parents did is they went and they bought a shed. They bought a shed, and, you know, Marie kicked in a lot of her money for babysitting or whatever. And she, they placed it in the backyard of the family house, and they converted the shed, Marie did. And if you go to Marie TV, put in Marie TV on YouTube, Tiny House, and you'll see her conversions on it. She's probably got about three or four. She's got a lot of videos on there, but you want the Tiny House ones, she did. And you'll see, she took a shed and converted it into a tiny house. And then, you know, a debt-free house. Now, she's got everything in there except for a shower. But then her and her son, because she has a small child, they go in the main house for that. But, hey, when you go to college, man, you're in a dorm room. The dorm room doesn't have a shower within the room. It's sent, you know, a community or dorm shower or bath, a dorm bathroom or whatever. There's toilets and all that. So Marie might be through with college now, knocking at the door finishing college. But here was a young teen mother, a mother-to-be, and she went out and she bought a shed. But once again, nothing from the government. Nothing from the government. So she's able to operate quicker that way. So once again, Marie TV on YouTube, and they, once again, put in teenager tiny houses, or so our retreats will be for everybody, though. You know, you can be a preteen, teen, or adult of any age, over 100 years old. But we'll be doing our works, our retreats, so to speak. So if you're interested in any of these retreats, then just contact us and let us know, so we can get you set up for a retreat schedule, so to speak. Let's see. Let's go to area code 708. Area code, your mic is open.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yeah, your mic is open, 708. We can hear you.
Yeah, I got like a few things that I want to say. People that are homeless, broke, they have no income. They have no money. That's good that that girl had the $400, but the other situation is to buy a camper at 400 is not really out there. I've looked for campers and stuff like that, and if you want a good one that's going to last you a long time, they're at least 800 to 1500 or more. To find that is a rarity, but it all comes back to the dynamics of where you're going to get the money from. Money has to come from somewhere. And then my other thing is I've been homeless, and I've been in multiple programs, and what it comes down to is the government and anybody that's running these programs, all these homeless people, they're pretty much just a paycheck. Anybody that is capable of working for themselves and bettering themselves, they will not help them because they rather give housing or something to somebody that's stuck on drugs, drinking, because they know they're going to lose the apartment. They'll come back into the program. I had called one time to try to help and get housing. The guy right away is like, what's the last for your Social Security? I'm like, wait a minute. Why am I going to give you my social just so I could be a number you guys collect money off me if you're not even going to give me any housing for sure? He said, I'll call back in a couple of weeks, and I'll see if I can help you, this and that. He's a good guy, but I'm not going to just give you my social so you can just take money from me off my Social Security and the government pays for it. So the reason I feel – that the government and all these programs really don't want to help the homeless is because it's a steady income paycheck. And as long as they have the homeless there, anybody that's crooked and the politicians say, oh, we need $30,000 to help these homeless out and pocket $10,000. And as long as they have that cycle going, there's always a way of income to take money out of it and put it in their pockets. So if you do help out the homeless all the way, then there's going to be no income for them. And that's why everybody leaves it in limbo. Nobody really wants to help. They say they want to help, but nobody really wants to do anything about it. But when they do something about it, then where's all that money going to go and what's going to happen? And I feel that if everybody really wanted to help, now's the time to help with the houses that Chris Collins got, because it's at an affordable price. Probably needed donated land and the actual government to get in on it. An actual mayor, an actual president, an actual politician, state representative, anybody that actually wants to help out the homeless, because the time is now that you could actually do something about it. Everybody always wants to say, oh, we donate, we help. But now's the actual time you could actually donate money to actually build these houses, and they'll be donated to the homeless, because the homeless can't do anything like that. And even if you built a shed, where are you going to get at least $800 to $1,000 for the wood to build it, the screws and all that? That's why the homeless are in tents, popping up tents in the forest, something easy to move around if you're going to be like a nomad. And that's pretty much what it comes down to. It's all about where you're going to get the money to get it. If you could donate these things to these people, they can have a way of living. And
first thing, one of the things that we'll be teaching is money literacy, okay? Because most people do not know what money in the fullness of the definition. And let me put this out here now, because there's some distinctions here that most people need to learn. We're talking about the fundamentals. The definition of money that I'm going to give out is it's an intangible, once again, money is an intangible medium of exchange, an intangible medium of exchange. The next distinction that you need to learn is currency. All right. Currency is a tangible form of money. Example, United States dollar, okay, is a tangible form of money. You can use it as a medium of exchange. A Mexican peso is the same thing. A euro is the same thing. They're tangible for mediums of exchange. Now, there are three basic types of money. There's commodity money, and commodity money is an asset that can be used as a medium of exchange, but it can also be used for something else. I'll give an example. In Japan at one time, and in the Philippines at one time, and even today in 2023 at one time, rice was considered money. It has a long storage thing, but the thing is, you can trade it for different things as a medium of exchange, but you can also eat it. Most of the people that are listening to this live stream, this podcast, gold and silver, I don't know, maybe somebody on this line might have, but in my 65 years, I've never been asked to pay for anything with gold or silver, nor have I asked for anything to be paid for gold and silver. A loaf of bread is more valuable to me than a gold bar. However, if you give me a gold bar, I know exactly where to go trade it. Now, I have here where I'm at right now, in stores between the time I go back to the Philippines, I've got some Filipino pesos. But if I walk into any store that I go down here, McDonald's, the grocery store, the drugstore, the car dealership, with these pesos I got, they're not going to be accepted because they don't know what to do with them. So I keep them until I go back. Now, that's fiat currency. And then there's representative – and fiat currency is also fiat money. That's the money that the government prints out. And then there's representative. Then there's also social capital. With social capital, and I can tell you how that works. Social capital is based on relationships. Now, for instance, with the Salvation Army, if you go into some Salvation Armies, and, you know, you're clean and they got a bed for you and everything and don't cause any problem, you can stay at a Salvation Army shelter, at least the ones that I'm familiar with, where I get day labor from on occasion, for 3 consecutive days, and the 4th day you got to start paying rent. Now, you're staying in
well,
and you're getting
I
in
to go
on
to the Salvation Army in the city, and they said,
right.
Well, if you're not on drugs or alcohol, you can't come in here. I was like, dude, so now I got to go backwards to go forward? That makes no sense. I'm not drinking or doing any drugs, and I'm not going to go back or say that I am.
Well,
let me tell you this.
Social capital, I just said that's just one place. Social capital is basically what kind of, in other words, if you're hungry, I mean, can you go, do you have enough of a relationship to ask somebody, look, can you help me out with $5, $2? Can you get me a Big Mac, give me a whatever? Social capital allows you to stay on somebody's couch, somebody's garage, somebody's whatever. Whatever you might need, you need to have social capital. All right? Social capital can be converted into to dollars and cents or whatever you wanted to. Now, when we're doing some of these retreats, okay, if a person comes in there, right, we're not asking for any money. Okay, we're saying, all right, we'll teach you this, and if you'll help us build this, okay, this is what we're going to give to you in exchange. At the end of the process, if you, you know, stick around long enough, you're going to have your own house, and you just came in with social capital. Social capital really is the once again, it's real simple. It, matter of fact, real social security is what kind of relationships that you have with other people. Now, I'll give you a good example. Several years ago, now this is the origin of this podcast, It's My House. I had a house sitter, and I said, look, if you house sit for me, you don't have to pay me any money. Not a penny in rent, all right? You just pay for whatever you pay for in internet connection and utilities, all right? But you don't owe me not a penny's worth of rent. Long story short, this person obliterated the social capital that we had between each other. So they're out of the house. I still have the house. But this person, she can't go to her, she's got 2 sisters. She can't go to either one of those houses because she has obliterated her social capital between her sisters, her mother. She can't go to her dad's house. She can't, that's 5 households where she has social capital, but she just turned P off the wrong way. Social capital, which is the power of being nice, goes a long, long way. So you, a lot of people, when they're looking at money, they're looking at fiat currency. They're looking at United States dollars, Mexican pesos, European pesos, Swiss franc. No. Money's much more. It's much more than that. You start building social capital and you maintain it by being nice to other people, doing volunteer work, not expecting anything back. I make it a point. Matter of fact, I spend typically 2 hours a day, Monday through Friday, 52 weeks out of the year on this podcast. I don't ask for anything. I'm building up. So this is that allowed me to get 15 to 16 acres of land by building up social capital by being on this podcast. When I go to one particular town in Oklahoma, the mayor picks me up. The mayor of the town.
That's nice. So how many people are listening on this podcast?
Well, we get 10 to 12,000 people a month. But I don't ask for anything. I don't ask for sponsorship. We don't sell commercials on here. People can get on here and talk about whatever they want to as long as they want to, because that's one of the ways I build up social capital.
So that's the easiest way to.
Now, everybody can build up social. If you go out and cut somebody's lawn. There's a whole lot of ways you can accumulate social capital. Matter of fact, with Reba, who's on the line, I knew Reba. Now, we met through doing podcasts. But when I needed transportation, and I'm opening up Reba's mic. When I needed transportation, because I was up in Chicago about 3-4 years ago for a day, and I needed somebody with a driver's license to where I was. I had enough social capital with Reba, where Reba made way over to where I was at Pleasant Stephens' house, and then we went to another town looking at land. So, but now I had an attitude with Reba. Reba wouldn't have come over and picked me up that day. So, Reba, you on the line?
Let me say two more things. Can I say two more things?
So, I would say, that's one of the first things we're going to teach with this retreat is everybody has money, but you got to. Yeah, you have to. Yeah. Reba, now, like Reba, we have been dialoguing for 2-3 years at least before we met in person.
Longer than that.
I'm just putting it out there. Social capital, and then when she came over, now I gave her something for her time, because Reba could have been doing something else that afternoon to make money. So I had to make it. She came over on social capital though.
Well, I'll say a handful.
And then I was able to pay her something.
Independent. So when they want to be independent, the thing that they've ran into, because I've asked them myself, and I know how the situation is. I'm like, why don't you get a job? And everybody always says that. But you need somewhere to shower up. You need somewhere to change your clothes. You can't be going all smelly to work and this and that with the same clothes that you've been on the street for a week. When they have that place to live, yeah, then they can shower up, change their clothes, have somewhere to change, and go to work decently, because some of these people are newly homeless, want to get back in the working field. Some people want to get a job and be independent. So I agree with the social capital. Never thought of that. But, yeah, most of them want to be independent, if not a handful. The other thing is you're talking about how to grow food. I would like you guys to link up with Hope Center in Blue Island, Pastor Moses Mendez, and they teach people how to grow things, and they have the ultra lights and show how to grow things and all that. If you guys would want to link up with him,
definitely. See now, listen. By you giving, because you're associated with Chris, right? Chris Collins.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
How'd you know?
See now, you got social capital. So if you're all right with Chris, you're all right with me. Okay. So and then by you getting out, by you giving out that information, that's building up social capital. So when we meet, or if we meet anything like that, I'm not going to be asking you for anything, because you're paying stuff forward before we even meet. Reba, you have any comments? Or Chris?
Yeah,
everybody's mic is
open.
Can
you hear
me? Yeah, we
can
hear you.
Can you hear me now? Okay,
yeah.
So I really commend the young man for sharing, his insight. Because that's what we need to hear from as well. Again, Chris pointed out that there are more homeless youth, and he's probably met, quite a lot of young people, and he can hear from them. I engage. My sons are like, Mom, they could shoot you, or you could be their next victim. And I'm like, I'm covered by the blood of Jesus. I'm protected. And then I've been through enough to not let anybody hurt me again. However, the youth perspective is so important, and thank you so much for sharing the resource in Blue Island. I would like to, have that for our conference, and you are also invited to meet with us on February 3rd at the Grand Ballroom, Chicago. So you can share your number.
He was already planning on coming, Reva.
Chris, okay, excellent. I know that you'll be there. So young man, he actually can represent. I like the fact that, once again, he shared a resource, and that is powerful. It's not always about money exchange. Something else that you shared as far as, a person needing maybe to bathe and things like that, I'll share real quick, then I'll get wordy too much. This is a situation I had with my sons. I have three sons.
And I thought I couldn't afford my light bill. And we were eating at, I was washing up at, I was buying water at one point. Was my water cut off? My water, one time my water was cut off. Because I had a house, a real house at the time, and I had a predatory mortgage, so I was struggling. But there are people who, like, would use McDonald's, Burger King, you know, restaurants, and just bathe. And so you could tell, of course, clothes need to be washed, you know, from time to time.
Ribby there?
Different resources.
Or is it me?
Pardon me? Can you hear me? Can you guys hear me?
Can anybody hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay, I can hear you. You're good.
So it is true that nobody wants to go to a job interview, smelly and so forth, but I kid you not, I've seen people to, you know, go and, you know, like wash one load, you know, at the laundromat. I don't know if they beg for the money, but, yeah, they're, you know, people figure out ways to do. And I know that depression and things could set in when a person is in a situation. So it's also, you know, just even